Welcome back, listeners, to the Lone Road iRacers podcast with me, your host, Guy Robertson. This week, we have a wonderful interview in store with Niad Glusic. And without further ado, let's get into the interview. Good evening, listeners, and I'd like to introduce or welcome Niad to the podcast. No problem. Niad, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Absolutely. Thank you, Guy. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. It's a real pleasure. My name is Niad Glusic, so last name is really, really tricky. So I have been sim racing for about 20-odd years or something. I've been on iRacing for the last 13 years now. So my current rating is about 1.8k, but I think I did a lot of, I took a lot of risks last season, so I was pretty much racing in all the sort of tricky races, so which is why it went down a little bit. So my realistic I rating is about 2.3k. This is where I feel most comfortable. So I have my old rig with me that I had for the last 15 years, basically an old battle chair, Fanatec Club Sport pedals, V1s. They are still amazing and they're still working absolutely fantastic. And I just recently got myself a CSL DD and a McLaren GT3 wheel. So that was my only improvement, I would say, in the last 15 years. Up to that point, I was on an old trusted G25 Logitech, which amazingly still works. So I just passed it on to my son. Amazing piece of equipment. And in terms of the iRacing itself, so I used to be on a radical bandwagon for pretty much every year I've been on iRacing. And then since the recent introduction of SR10, I tried it for one season and I just couldn't get on with the car. So definitely it doesn't suit my style. So I've given up on it and I've stopped racing it in the Radical Sim Racing League as well, which then prompted me to sort of stay in the league and do something useful. So then with Sandra and the guys, I offered my help and assistance to be the steward and then to investigate some of the incidents that take place, but do it in a sort of an educational manner so that people can learn from it rather than just go out and punish people.
Well, a couple of things there. The Logitech equipment, I started the same way, G29. It's solid as a rock. I've dropped mine off my old sim rig a few times while I've been dismantling things. It bounces. It's, yeah. it's tough as a tractor, you know.
Absolutely.
So it will last for decades, and to, you know, pass it through to your family. Wow, what a gift. And
absolutely.
The SR10, yes. I had the same problem. The SR8 was slightly more, the steering wheel was on more to the right hand side, and now the SR10 is on the left. It does handle completely different, and as a lot of people will know listening to this podcast, whatever iRacing have done in season 2 2023, in some cases people are now not even racing it because it's not handling quite the same as last season. So I totally get it, and yes, I found it difficult as well first season. I was in a kind of another league than the Radical Sim Racing one, but I struggled because of how it handled differently against the old SR8. So totally get it, buddy. So one of the questions we've got is, what got you into iRacing?
Okay, so I'll just answer the question that precedes that one, which is how I got into the sim racing at all. So basically, my first start was with the F1 franchise back in the end of late 90s, beginning of 2000s. So F1 Challenge and these kind of things, which then prompted me to actually start really liking Formula One. And I have been an avid fan for the last 23 years. So since 2000, I've been watching Formula One really, really regularly, following everything. And then in, I think around 2003, I discovered the Grand Prix Legends. And I really loved it because it was really, really challenging. And that prompted me to actually start my sort of online racing, which was at the time really a thing. So I then got into the a couple of leagues that I was racing with online, and I really enjoyed it. And I also started my first sort of stewarding gig. I was covering clubman league and that kind of things. And then as GPL was actually, you know, drawing to a close towards the 2008, when just iRacing started. Actually, it was the same guy, the same creator, Dave Kemmer, was the author of, he was the creator of GPL, and then he created iRacing. And I really liked the vision that he had, and I really liked the platform, because that for me was a dream come true for somebody who is you know, into sim racing. I'm really stable guy, so when I have something, I don't tend to change a lot. So that's why iRacing is really fantastic for me. I don't like hopping from one title to another. I don't race anything else apart from iRacing. No ACC or R Factor or anything. I'm pretty happy where I am, and pretty happy to have a sort of a team of people developing that sim based on the you know, input from all the people that we have on iRacing. And for me, this is just, you know, perfect. I wouldn't change a thing about it.
Wonderful. And, you know, when did I'm not a history buff of iRacing. When did iRacing actually come out? Was it something like 2008?
2008. I didn't join instantly. I just waited to see how it's going to work out. And then in 2010, I think that's when they brought out Skip Barber, which was said to be based on a model that we had in the GPL, but with much better graphics, much better sort of force feedback and all that. So that was just a natural step. And I went on with it, and I really liked it. I liked the structure of the competition. I like how the cars and tracks were made. One thing I noticed definitely was whenever I was playing previous racing titles, I always noticed how tracks were different to the real world. And iRacing was the only one where actually, when I'm looking at the onboard footage of iRacing and the actual real world track, I can see the similarities and I can see how similar they are. And that was really a good thing.
Yeah, we had a guest a couple of podcasts ago who has driven a SR2, a Radical SR2 around Sebring. In real life, and he compared the same kind of footage and noise of the engine, etc., tire screech, to iRacing. He says it's probably as close as it can be without actually, you know, recording live footage and overlaying it. So it's really good to hear.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there is a question I've got prepared. I know you've just touched base on it. So we've just had in this season Formula Ford come out and the Renault Clio for road racing. What other car would you like to see if any car could go into the iRacing service brought in?
Ooh, that's a very good question. That's very good question. So I have to think about it a little bit. I'm not too much into like GT cars. This is not one thing that I think iRacing, it was absolutely tremendous that they brought in the whole sort of GT3, GT4, GTE sort of class, that they put together a multi-class. And this is something that I've been hooked on lately a lot. But in terms of the cars that I'd like to see, probably as an F1 fan, I'd like to see some of the, you know, some, a few other historical F1 cars like McLaren. What was it? What was the one that Senna and Prost have driven? Was it MP4 or something? That legendary McLaren Honda would be really nice to add to the service. I think it would be really nice to have the karting as well on iRacing. But I think the reason why that doesn't work is that the weight in karting, the distribution of weight and how you handle the weight is the biggest part of the karting. So I don't think it would really translate well to the sim. But, you know, I like that they add a bit more prototypes, because I'm now into prototype kind of racing. So it's nice to see that they've added the recent BMW LMDH hybrid. That was a really good thing to add. And it came out on iRacing a few weeks before it came out for real, which is a really nice touch. But I've also seen some other new generation of LMDH cars that have been added, like Cadillac and the Ferrari. And I'd like to see iRacing sort of expand on that portfolio a little bit.
Personally, I think something very small like mini racing, you know, the up-to-date mini Clubman or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be quite good, close racing.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
So what would you say your favourite track is and why?
So amazingly, I would expect myself to say that it would be one of the F1 tracks, because this is something I grew up with and very fond of them. But when I got into the iRacing, there were quite a few other tracks that I haven't raced through the F1. So now, probably my two favorite tracks, and I'm really, really struggling to figure out which one is my best favorite, would be the Road Atlanta and Road America. In terms of the former F1 tracks, not necessarily modern, but I really, really like the Mosport, the Canadian Tire Motorsport Grand Prix, whatever they call it. I really like that track. It's one of those old school undulating tracks that goes up and down, left and right. It really gives you that flow, and it just makes you feel there is always a little bit more that's left on the table, which is really inviting for any sim or real racer. You know, when you have that challenge, you know there's just that little bit more, few more tenths that you can squeeze out if you do this corner differently. So yeah, those would be my top three, definitely. Mosport, Road Atlanta, Road America. But there are so many tracks that I really loved. You know, I just can't begin to count all of them. I think it would be easier to say which tracks I dislike, you know, than to say which tracks I like more.
I think the Canadian Tire Motorsport, but I love that track as well. And you're right, it's the undulations. Moss Corner, how many times do people get caught out on that little uphill table top corner? Everybody knows it's coming, but we try and push and push, and it's not one of those corners you can push on. It's one of those where you've got to slow it down, get the car balanced to be able to get it out there and get some, you know, real good acceleration out of it.
Absolutely, you pointed it right. I think it's one of the most challenging and probably one of the best corners in all of the motor racing, because, you know, you are going down and then you have a bit of a compression, then you are going up slightly to the right, and then you have to hit the brakes and then somehow slide the car and trying to point it to the apex, which is then really, really important because it takes you to a really long straight. And that corner always leaves you wanting for more. And you always know you can do a bit more, but then it punishes you really, really badly. And as you said, we've always seen cars go off there. You know, that's a given.
So we're going to touch base on, you mentioned it, what tracks don't you like? Give me two that you think they're just not for Nihad.
Okay, so Long Beach would definitely be one of those. I just don't enjoy the track. It's especially the last sort of hairpin, which gives me a lot of problems. So when I'm racing it, and I think it's not a good track for racing, to be honest. I also hated the Grand Prix layout of the Barcelona, the Catalunya Grand Prix. But I really loved that they went to the previous sort of historic version of it, that they got rid of that horrible chicane at the very end, which I never, never really liked. It was completely pointless. So that used to be my, you know, one of my least favorite tracks is now getting back to becoming, you know, one of my favorites. What other tracks? Virginia International Raceway. It's similar for me it's similar to Nürburgring or the Nordschleife to me, because it's one of those tracks that you're okay to drive it, but not to race it, because I just don't think those tracks are really good for sort of close racing. Yeah, they're good for driving sort of time trials and trying to get the, you know, trying to be brave, squeeze out most time, but just definitely not racing. What other? Oran Park. My God. I never liked that track. That's a horrible track.
For me, I'm gonna touch base on Oran Park. That's my favourite track.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's Point City. If I'm in the Radical D class. Sorry, Formula D, the old IRO4 as it was. Formula Dilara. I love that track and guaranteed some good points that week. But unfortunately, on the Radical season, it's not even on the season that we're just starting, unfortunately. So I have to try and squeeze some points out somewhere else. And you touched base at Long Beach on that last hairpin. Yeah, what a joke. I don't know which racing track designer thought that was something good to do, but yeah, it's pretty awful. It just ruins the whole momentum. It's just a bottleneck for cars who are coming round the corner, not flat out, but at a pretty good pace into a blind exit. And yeah, there's massive pileups usually in lap ones and two, as we both have probably
experienced. Yeah, definitely. And the worst thing, and the worst thing is that if somebody wants to stick it on the inside, you're basically screwed. They will get away with it, and you're screwed. And that's something that happens a lot. And then, you know, I did a couple of even multi-class races in that track, and it just you're bound to have a pile up in front of you, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yeah, I understand the love for the sort of the city tracks, and you know, as you said, the designer has to stick the hairpin there. The problem is they don't have a lot of choice. You know, they can't say, okay, this is how I'd like this corner to go, but he doesn't have any space, so he has to live with it, just like Monaco Grand Prix. And I think, you know, Long Beach is probably the answer to what Monaco would look like if we have it in iRacing, and I just don't think it would work.
No, and I keep listening to other podcasts, and you know, they keep talking about Monaco potentially being one of the future tracks on iRacing, but yeah, it's not come to life yet. So it'll be interesting if it ever happens. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's one of those tracks where they can race the F1 car on, or the Mercedes, which is the only version that is on iRacing at the moment. But yeah, sometimes you have to think, is it the right thing to do as well, not just for the prestige.
Well, you know what? iRacing is in it to make money. So whichever track they can project to make good sales, they will make it. And I think they will make Monaco sooner or later. You know, it probably takes a lot of graphics engine to run all the buildings and all that. But if they could make Long Beach, I'm sure they can make Monaco. And it's a question of time before we get it. You know, it will be quickly forgotten, you know, just like some other tracks, because it simply doesn't work. People don't find it useful, because they will lose I rating, they will use safety rating, and that's a given. So that's not something people will do regularly. But you know, it's going to be there for the challenge, and it is a challenging track. Driving between the walls is always always very tricky. You know, you're always at your limit, but even more so than on other tracks, because you know that the punishment is going to be really quick and severe. And so that sometimes that's a good thing, you know. So in terms of the Monaco layout, it's I say much better than the Long Beach one. And you know, it maybe looks nicer and all that, so, but it's narrow definitely.
Dre is the Audible iRacer's companion. Want to improve your results or get more wins? Download Dre, the digital race engineer, today. Hit the link in the show notes for a 10% discount. Okay, so I'm going to ask you an out-the-box question now.
Go ahead.
So who would you like to play in a movie and why?
Who would I like to play in a movie and why? You ask all these difficult questions, Guy. No, it is a good question. It just prompts you to think about things that you normally don't think about. I don't know. I'd like to play, I would say no specific person, but I was always interested in some of these sort of apocalyptic survival franchises, you know, the movies or series where people find themselves in a completely new world, a new civilization, and then they have to go back to the medieval times and, you know, try and reinvent things, try and sort of survive and, you know, get the food and, you know, without all the commodities that we're used to. So, you know, something like that definitely would be my kind of thing. I really like the Walking Dead franchise back in the days, you know, and that's something that really got me thinking a lot about, you know, the world as it is now and the world as it could be if things go really south, you know, in terms of, you know, conflicts that in the world that are, you know, that I think are looming. And, you know, sooner or later, we will find ourselves in similar situation where we have to, you know, try and survive and, you know, become ruthless animals in order to do so.
Wonderful answer. Thank you for that.
Cheers, buddy.
What would you say is your proudest moment so far as an iRacer?
Okay, I think there are two distinct things that I'm proud of. One is sort of generic, and that is that I've never been protested in the 12 or 13 years I've been on iRacing. So that's a good achievement. That shows how, you know, what kind of a racer I am. I tend to be really, really clean, respectful, and I always review my own incidents. I always review the incidents of the others, and that's how I learn, you know, how to survive, you know, how to be the better racers. You know, for me, sporting etiquette is definitely a priority, even more so than the result. So, you know, if I'm in a situation where, you know, I'm going for a good result, but I have a chance to take someone out, I will, you know, I will back off and, you know, I will keep the result as it is and not risk it, because that for me is more important. And the second thing I mentioned is when we, you know, the radical sim racing league that we have now, it became from something that we used to call Formula Baltic League or FBL. And this was formed by a couple of Italian guys who just happened to be working in the Baltics at the time, which is why it was called Formula Baltic. And they sort of went around, they watched the races, and then they handpicked people to invite to the league. And that's how all that story started. So when they sort of left, then we, you know, Sandro and myself and a couple of others, we stayed behind and we kept that going. And then we decided to create this endurance series, which people really like the idea of. So we had the SR8 Radical, which isn't normally something that you race for 90 minutes because it's very challenging. It's a very challenging car. And then we started that 90-minute series with two mandatory pit stops. And it was quite a new challenge for me because I never did races that were longer than an hour. I didn't do endurance races and all that. I do that now a bit more. I'm getting into that because I really like it. But doing it with a Radical, you know, on my own was not something that we used to do. And then we had one of the key things how we secured really clean racing was that we awarded points for no incidents. So, you know, if you get a little bit of incidents, you get, you know, less points for that. But for example, if you have a clean race, up to four incidents, you can get 5 points additional. So I managed to do a season of 10 races with Radical, one of which was Nordschleife as well. So a couple of others that were really tricky ones. And in the 10 races of 90 minutes each, I had 16 incidents overall, and I was a champion at the end of that season by being clean, by keeping out of the trouble, and just never giving up, just being persistent, collect the points, and, you know, so becoming a champion and then having a 16 incident across the whole season, collecting all the sort of incident points reward, and that was really something I'm really proud of.
So you should be, buddy. That's an amazing feat. You know, Not often have I been DQ'd on iRacing in the 2 and a bit years I've been racing, but it does happen from time to time for whatever reason, lots of reasons. So, yeah, over a league season where everybody's really battling, yeah, hats off to you, buddy. That's an amazing feat.
Thanks, guys.
So I'm going to ask you a little question, a little bit of a question on something that you touched base on at the beginning of the podcast. So stewardship. So you're currently doing the stewardship for the Radical Sim Racing League, and I'm part of that league as well. So talk us through how you go about that?
Okay, so as I said, I volunteered. I'm doing this for the league because I really wanted to stay involved with the league. And I wanted it to be, as I mentioned, I wanted this to be educational, because I'm very, I'm very anal about analyzing incidents. I like to look at different angles, and I wanted to show the other people as well what an incident looks like when you try and look at it from an objective point of view. Because as racers, we are always biased, and we often don't see the other guy's perspective. So, you know, almost every time we have an incident, we think it's the other guy's fault. And I can see that from the radio messages in the official races. You know, as soon as somebody has an accident and they scream on the radio, I know that they haven't even considered that, because they haven't had the chance to look at the replay. So they take that bias to you. So this is something I wanted to introduce into the league, and to just, rather than just looking at the incident and saying it's this guy's fault, he's going to get one penalty point, I did a bit more effort. So I look at the incident, for the incident that is reported. So I don't tend to look at incidents if they haven't been reported. I prefer that the guys will talk it out. So if somebody says, look, it was my mistake, sorry about that. And the other guy said, no problem, shit happens, let's go on. So this is the preferred way of dealing with incidents. But if they sometimes feel that, you know, the one guy is always doing the same similar things, they make a protest, which is completely anonymous. It could be somebody who's not even in the race. It could be somebody from the league who's seen it on the broadcast. They can say, could you have a look at that? I think that wasn't right. So then I look at that. I take that incident. I look at it from a number of different perspectives. And then I look at the behavior of those drivers before the incident and after the incident. And then I look at the context of how the incident happened. And then I usually try and find that one little moment which contributed to the incident actually taking place, and I try to provide the evidence, and then I put a little pictures, little screenshots, and then I explain to people how I reached my decision, and I think that really helps, because then it allows other people to look at the incidents from my own perspective, and then for me, I'm happiest when somebody says, oh, you see, I see that now. I didn't see that before. So you're absolutely right. So that is the proudest moment that I can do. And, you know, if nobody contests my decisions, and, you know, make no mistake, I can be wrong as well. But, you know, if people see how I reach the decision, if everything is transparent, then I think we have a really, really good system to show people how incidents happen, how you can avoid them, what sort of behavior is not good, what could have been the better course of action. And you know, so that's the key thing about it, you know, educating people through the incident reporting, so to speak.
Again, a wonderful insight, and I think, you know, how can it be improved, really, from that method that you've put together? Can't fault it. You know, we're all continually learning. You know, all of us are human. We make mistakes. You've got up today. Nobody means to make a mistake, but guess what? Sometimes, like you say, shit happens.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I've had it in a race where my foot slipped off my brake pedal and got stuck in between my clutch and my brake pedal, you know, and I crashed into somebody. It happens.
It happens, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. You know. Yeah, and so, my idea is not to go for those mistakes that people make unintentionally. For me, the key is to identify where a racer has made a conscious decision to either go for an overtake or to go for a late braking, and then to demonstrate to them in a replay to show how much of a difference that has made, and that how costly that decision was. Because when they see how later they have actually braked than the guy in front of them, and they had all the indicators, they saw the lights, they saw the smoke, and they continued, because they wanted to make up places. So it's always, you know, when we are racing, we're always making these small mini decisions, you know, should I go for it? Should I not go for it? Should I fight it? Should I defend it? You know, we always make these decisions that will eventually either be rewarding for us or they will punish us. So when I'm doing the stewarding, I'm always trying to find the conscious decision that the racer made rather than a mistake that he has made. If somebody makes a mistake, you know, these things happen. We always push. We are driving on the limit. We will always make mistakes. We shouldn't be punished for that. But sometimes we make choices and we make decisions that affect others, destroy other people's races. We are being reckless. So this is when I come in and I say, you know, here's a penalty point. It's nothing much yet, but if you get to the 3 penalty points, then you will have to start from pits. And then if it continues going on like this, you know, you will build up enough points that it will start to be really, really punishing for you. And you will not be getting so many points. So then you need to consider. And it's always about finding a couple of individuals who are more prone to the incidents than the others. You know, in that case, I would sometimes investigate, even if it's not reported, just to show that this one person is continuously making the same mistake and just want them to improve it. And then, you know, I would not stop at the incident report. I would have a chat with the drivers, you know, privately through Discord messages. You know, we would have a talk. You know, I would give them a bit of a pep talk, you know, tell them how good they're doing, however some things they can improve. And, you know, I think they really take my advice really well. And that has been working really nice. What Sandra and I were thinking to do in the future, as you mentioned, the potential improvement, we are thinking about possibly creating a small rookie series within our league. So we would invite people that have a low I rating, that have little experience, that want to try radical, but they don't want to do it in an official setting. And then in the rookie league, my stewarding would be more involved around mentoring, so giving the people advice. So I would look at more incidents just for the sake of, you know, teaching them, you know, how they can survive, how they can improve their racecraft. And I think that little feeder rookie series would be really good for our league if we can pull it off.
That sounds a wonderful idea, and I look forward to seeing how that progresses.
Definitely.
What real life racing driver has influenced you?
As a, you mean in terms of racing?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have to say I have been a big fan of Kimi Raikkonen because at the time I started watching Kimi when he was going up against Michael Schumacher. And I'm always supporting the underdog. So I don't have any particular team or a driver that I follow that I would root for. I would always go for the underdogs. So, for example, I wasn't supporting Lewis Hamilton when he was racking up title after title, but I'm supporting him now. I want him to get back because that makes Formula One interesting for me. So in terms of drivers that have influenced me, I really liked, as I said, I really liked Kimi Raikkonen because of his style. He had that raw speed. He had really good sort of tire management. You know, he was ruthless when he needed to be, and he was you know, he was smart when he needed to be. So, you know, he was definitely a big influence on me when I was just you know, starting out. But then, you know, looking back at some other drivers, I think Prost is definitely somebody who is who influenced me the most in not, you know, not being this, you know. So you have the Prost and you have the Senna guy, you know, that for me, that is the essential division between all the drivers. You know, you have the guy who will, you know, who will go for everything out on the track. They will risk everything. They will get really good results, but they will get lots of retirement. Whereas, you know, Prost and maybe Lauda to an extent were the guys who would say, you know, I'm going to go only as fast as I need to win. I'm not going to go faster. I don't want to have a minute in front of the next guy and risk it all. And that reflects on my style. So, you know, whenever I'm racing, you know, it's survive the first lap and then find that little space and then try and keep the pace going. Because for me, fighting with people, especially at the beginning of the race, it doesn't make any sense. Because if a guy is faster than you, he's just going to be hounding you all the time. And you're just going to be thinking, you're going to be looking back. You're not going to be looking forward. Let him go. Try and follow him, and then, you know, if he's going to have an incident, he's going to have an incident with somebody ahead of you, and then you will get 2 places back. You know, later in the race, it's a different story. But for me, beginning of the race is not when you need to be fighting or risking a lot. I will gently defend, you know, show them that I'm not going to let them pass so easily, but I'm not going to risk it all on, you know, in the first couple of laps, definitely.
And I think, obviously, if the league's rookie coaching and mentoring by Nihad and Sandro comes off, racecraft, you know, we both see it, the amount of people that crash out lap one, maybe bit of the first corner of lap two, really, as well, because it's the first real time that they're hitting it with full pace. It's crazy, and I think that's one of the biggest things you can learn as you progress through iRacing and probably any sim racing, really. You can't win it lap one, you can't really win it lap two, but you can definitely lose it. As soon as you're in that pit, so even a quick repair, you're 30 seconds to a minute behind, the race is done.
Absolutely, yeah. Doesn't work that way.
How would you go about, I know you've said you're not in the league racing anymore, but how were you going about preparing for that all-important once-a-week league race?
Okay, so one thing would be through watching races. So if I can find some of these streamers that have raced, so you have a first-person view of them doing the race, preferably in that car, on that track, I would look at a lot of those races simply to understand how the race unfolds, what are the most common incidents that people will have, which corners would they have incidents at, and just to see what's the best strategy for that particular race. Then let's say if the league race is on a Sunday, and if it matches or if it mirrors the official races, I will do as many official races as I can in order to prepare for the league. So I would normally, if I have the time, I would do probably 2 half-hour sessions during the week, and then I would join the race with about half an hour left. But what I discovered with me is that if I over practice, I then start to go into a slump. If you catch my drift. So if I do too much practice, I think I get better, and then I start to take more risks, and all of a sudden I start becoming really, really bad.
You seem to get to a peak.
Exactly. And then, after a certain amount of time, you will start to come back up. But your league race is already behind you. So that's why I'm trying not to over-practice. You know, I need to be confident about the braking areas. I need to be confident about, the tires. And what I would also do is I would practice sort of both lines. So, the ideal line and the offline, just going through the corners, using only the left side of the track, so that when I'm defending or when I'm attacking, I'm aware of the grip, which is outside of the racing line. And this is a really important aspect when you're racing.
Yeah, something I personally I've never considered. Understanding the dirty or the clean side and the difference in grip, and if you can gain any benefit from it, yeah. Absolutely.
Eventually you will find yourself either attacking the guy on the outside, and then you find yourself, you don't know what kind of speed you can carry through, by taking that line. So that's why for me it's important in the practice just to know, how those other lines work, the alternative lines. So when you take them, you will be better in your sort of staying on track and carrying more speed through those lines, because you simply practice them. I think people often neglect this aspect.
Totally agree, and I'm definitely one who's not even considered it. So brilliant answer. Weather. iRacing, the iRacing gods have been teasing us with weather for at least a year now. So it's clearly going to come to iRacing at some point. Are you for or against it?
Well, I'm definitely for it. I think any simulator, any driving simulator, especially as detailed as iRacing is, we have a really good sort of, weather pattern already inside it, with the wind and the humidity and the track temperature. So we need that rain. Rain is definitely an essential part of all racing that you can imagine. It will throw the spanner in the works in most of the races, and we don't have that unpredictability when it comes to iRacing yet. So I definitely look forward to having rain. I know it has been delayed for a long time, but I'm the kind of guy who has all the trust in Dave Kemmer and his team. And I think the only reason why it has been delayed so long is that they want to get it as right as possible. And I know that Dave Kemmer was talking in an interview many years ago, when rain wasn't even even an afterthought. It was something that they wanted to have. And he was saying about all the different things that you have to get right. It's not just, yes, F1 franchise, it has the rain, okay? But it's just visual rain and reduced grip. What we want is the puddles. We want the aquaplaning. We want the water to be dispersed at a certain rate with the different tires. We want all these things, and these things take a lot of time to get right. And then you have to develop different tire models, the brake models, because the rain and the reduced temperature will affect all those variables that will affect, how we feel on the racetrack. So I think they're trying their best to get it right. Otherwise, I think they could have got it visually, they could have reduced the grip, and then everybody would be complaining about it. So, I would say just trust them, give them all the time that they need. So when they bring it on, it should be really, really smashing. How will that look on the graphics? How will that look on the computer specs that we have? Will we have to upgrade? All of these are really important questions, and it's gonna complicate things a lot. And I think at the beginning there will be specific sort of rain series or changeable weather series where people will be able to try it. And I would really like iRacing to be the platform that they do, Le Mans 24 hours and these kind of things. I think that will be the best simulator for it, but it simply doesn't have, some of these elements that other sims have. So definitely, whether I'm for it, whenever it comes.
Yeah, I'm a definitely for it as well. I'm like you. Wait till they've got it as good as it can be, because they'll always progress it further when they think it's perfect. Nothing's ever perfect, is it? There's always some development of something as technology changes. So,
yes, and when it comes to iRacing, we know that the sim is being updated at least 4 times a year, after every season. So, whatever they roll out, it's going to be tricky, but this is the iRacing model. We roll out the update, we give you the week 13 to try it on, and then we fix whatever we need to fix before the season. But then only after the first full season will we be able to sort of, pick out, the things that need to be fixed, and then they take time to be fixed. So, iRacing is an evolving thing. When I just joined in the beginning, we didn't have most of the things that we have on it now, but they have added them over the years, and it constantly keeps improving and becoming, better and better. So, even when the rain comes, it will take, probably a year, probably 4 full seasons before they iron out all the issues and the problems, and it can only get better, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. I've seen a subtle change. People might think I'm crazy at times, but Marshalls, such a simple thing as Marshalls now, around a lot of the British tracks, I would say, the Marshalls were not there. Now, Brands Hatch, they're there. And actually, when you crash near them, there's a little bit of animation as well. Mm-hmm. And that's it might be a very, very minor little upgrade. But actually, for me personally, it's massive. You go to the American tracks, you mentioned Road Atlanta earlier. The Marshalls are there. They're not doing a lot, but they're clearly in the station. So why wouldn't they be in on all the other tracks? And now they're in very bright orange overalls. So it's absolutely wonderful to see just that little aspect alone, being worked on, identified, and bang, it's there. It's brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I think they just have probably too much on their plate. You and I, we probably see only the road version, but that's only about 25% of the iRacing. Cool. There's the ovals, the dirt ovals and all that. And, there's so much of iRacing that we never, even think about. So it's not just, if it was just the road, I think they would have, 4 times the capacity to deal with all the things that we need. But, iRacing is mainly an American brand. They have a really big audience in the ovals, so and that needs to be catered as well. So let's just appreciate that, how big of a scale of this is, and how many things, as you said, they could improve, just little things that will make things better. But but then we want big things. We want we want rain, and we want these kind of things. So they will never be able to deliver what we want. So but they're trying their best. So
no, yeah. You get no complaints from me. I love it.
Yes.
Nihad, so when you're not racing or working, what other hobbies and interests do you have?
Okay, so first thing, I love sailing. I'm a sailing skipper, have been sailing skipper for the last 10 years or so. I would go probably two or three times here on the Adriatic coast, sail with my friends or with my family. Sometimes it's leisure, sometimes it's adrenaline, these kind of things. This is something that a British friend got me into back in 2012, and I immediately loved it. So yeah, this is one of my sort of big hobbies. Another hobby is that I'm a guitar player. I have a pretty, I would say, decent rock musician career behind me. I was with a band for about 15 or 16 years. I then left the band because, you know, I started a family, had, two kids, was studying at the time, changed my work. So I just couldn't cope with that anymore. But, you know, still to date, I have several guitars. I have my amp in the room where I'm racing. So I can always sort of jam a little bit. And, you know, whenever I sit with my friends, I always grab an acoustic guitar, always sort of contribute to the atmosphere. You know, we start singing and having just a really good time. I also like photography. I like flying my drone, you know, and sometimes, you know, putting some materials together when I travel. Yeah, so these are the most sort of, you know, the most interesting hobbies that I do, and they all sort of match nicely together, you know. So you have somebody who flies a drone, sails a boat, and plays a guitar, and you have a perfect combination.
Brilliant. So yeah, the life is full on.
A life is full on, absolutely.
So we're at that time of the show where I'm gonna offer you the show's question, okay? So, dead or alive, who would you like to interview and why?
Okay, so I think one of the most interesting personas that I've come across, it is from the Formula One milieu. I did mention Kimi Raikkonen earlier as the guy I really liked, because he was around at the time of when I started watching F1. He was the underdog that was attacking the very big grand Michael Schumacher and the Ferrari at the time. And one of Kimi's idols actually was the James Hunt himself. And, you know, later on, I learned more about James Hunt, and he's absolutely smashing season with fighting with the Niki Lauda. And I really I really appreciate or like his sort of, you know, bad boy style. You know? He was the guy who would come to the, you know, to the racetrack completely relaxed, surrounded by women, with a cigarette in his mouth, you know, and you know, mildly intoxicated, and it just, you know, he just didn't give a damn. So I would like to sit down with James Hunt and interview him and just have a couple of drinks with him and just, you know, just have a chat, because, you know, he's been a really good commentator afterwards, and I really liked his his openness and his candid answers that he had. So definitely, I would like to interview him for that, because I think it will be just a smashing interview. And if we could have a couple of drinks, that would be even better.
I don't think you'd have to twist his arm for a couple of drinks.
Definitely not.
Well, Nihad, I'm going to offer you a little chance now to for a shout out. Anybody you want to mention, over to you.
Well, thank you first and foremost for inviting me here. Really appreciate what you're doing. It's been a pleasure to have a chat about iRacing, and I would be happy to come back anytime. I'd like to give a shout to all to all the SR10 martyrs, so all the people who are racing the SR10 despite all the adversities, and I really hope that the car will be back to where it should be, that it will be better. I think it's having a little bit of a bad patch now. And also, you know, shout out to all the people at, you know, Radical Sim Racing and the Radical Racing League, and, you know, people that spend a lot of time chatting with on the Discord chat. You know, some really, really good people out there, and I'm really fond of all of them. So, you know, just give them a big shout out. And definitely James Parfitt, you know, is the guy I like to argue the most. We always had good discussions, you know. I just like to tease him, but, you know, I really like the guy. I sometimes tease him too much, you know. I just get his head in all the time, but, you know, He started his commentating when we were in the Formula Baltic League. He did the first sort of broadcast for us, and then, you know, from there we could see that he had that talent to become a really good commentator. So I'm really happy to see him doing so well with his JP broadcasting channel.
James has been an early guest on the podcast, and yeah, we all love James. His commentary at times is crazy mad, but yeah, we love him for it.
Absolutely. And I think James is one of the guys who looks forward to the rain the most. He often talks about it in the forecast. He's absolutely frustrated that it hasn't got on yet. And I like to tease the hell out of him.
Yeah. Next time I see him, I'll sort of mention the weather to him then.
Absolutely. <yeah.
laughs> So, Niad, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you as a person and a fellow iRacer. And, you know, really thanks for what you've done behind the scenes with the league over many years with Sandro and the others. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Niad, and giving us wonderful insight into himself and the iRacing community. So, Niad, thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much, and see you on track, hopefully.
That's the end of another epic interview. Real good insight from Niad, especially the stewardship. Really got into that. It was a really good thing to hear about. So that brings to the end of another podcast, and we'll see you on the track soon.